Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. This is your first time listening because it's been a busy week in wrestling and people may be looking for audio. You've stumbled upon what is probably the only semi-positive show about WWE on the network. We also cover AEW at the same time. We are kind of the stateside staple. What are you laughing at?
I like that we are bracing for impact and critique right out the chute. Today. I think we all know where this is going if you've been listening to the show, but for those of you who have not, welcome aboard. This is gonna be a little bit different than what you've been listening to in your wrestling audio feed this week. Probably.
I mean, we're light on the news, we're heavy on the snark. We've been doing this for a decade plus, so I mean, you know, we're the show that covers American wrestling usually.
Used to close caption WWE again if we're just initiating people for first time listeners.
Yeah, and I used to be over on Fightful doing their after shows, and I write, and I used to act, and I used to do a lot of other things. I'm old.
It's nice to finally legally be able to just be like, yeah, I used to close caption them. That's my gravitas.
For years,
I was just on the network going like, yes, I like wrestling. And not really kind of like
because we were saying, you know, we primarily concentrate on stateside wrestling. That was true when WWE was the only real game in town. And then someone will always go, do you do Impact? I go, no, go listen to Mike and JD. They do Impact because they were originally an Impact show. So it's like one of those things where it's like mostly AEW, WWE. If something tickles my fancy, I'll go there. Or Chris saw something. But yeah, so main story. WrestleMania was a success by any metric of either critical or commercial. I don't care. If you're the kind of person who hates WWE so much that your reaction is to yell sex trafficking on the internet about WWE, we may not be your show, and that's fine.
I think we've been pretty critical about all that, too. It's not like we didn't go in pretty hard on the deposition.
No, we did, but it's like,
or whatever it was,
here's the other explanation is I am knee deep in Twitter and internet discourse, and Chris just says I'm not dealing with that crap.
Yeah, I got rid of my Twitter. It was good.
And the reactions to the effusive, or I don't know if effusive is the right word there. There was a large amount of praise for this WrestleMania weekend by people who watched it and people who liked it. And people were like, man, that was really good. That was really good. That was really good. But, you know, then come the people who just can't say anything good. So it's like, oh, so you support a company that supports sex trafficking, do you? I'm like, this is not the appropriate time for that. It's just, I get your bitterness. I get it. You're pretty, too, over there, AEW. Pat you on the head there.
I thought there's nothing wrong with hiring Ric Flair in 2024. Or Matt or Jeff Hardy. I mean, these are not problematic individuals. So I get it. I get where they're coming from on this.
Oh yeah. Well, we didn't like that either. Okay.
Okay. Then like what do you like?
Did you like it enough to quit? No.
Yeah. All right.
know, it's one of those types of things where I just went, all right, look, we're all hypocrites in some way because this is a dirty, scummy business that we watch. There are no winners here, as Nick Bakay used to say. It's a toss.
I guess that's what makes the show different a little bit is like, we don't watch one of these two products, the two dominant ones, AEW, WWE, and think, ah, one of these guys is the angel and one of these guys is the devil. And one of these guys is making good wrestling and the other one, ipso facto, by virtue of not being the other guy, is making bad wrestling.
Yes, we call it balls and strikes, I think. Although we do have our biases, but you know, you'll get to learn those as we go along.
I like calling foul. Especially towards you.
Yes. Well, you'll have plenty of opportunity, probably. The WWE announced total gate for WrestleMania up 78% from last year. Dave's words, which is quite amazing, Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer. But with the nature of how pricing is done, it showed how much heavier the demand was. Last year's number between the two shows was $19,749,071, and that increase would come out to roughly $35,153,346, or about $17.57 million each night. Peacock viewership up 41% over last year. Chris, this was a good weekend for them, all things considered, business-wise.
People were riding on the Peacock. Gotta like it. And, I mean, if you're NBC, you've got to like that, too. WWE, clearly a draw to getting people to sub up for something in a landscape that is populated with a lot of different subscription networks right now. That's good for WWE as well, frankly. And AEW would love to be in a position like that where you have a bunch of different sub networks looking at, you know, your numbers recently and going, wow, you guys can be a needle mover in terms of subscriptions in a very competitive market like that. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Now they have two of those with the NFL as well. And also I would say the Premier League. Premier League's probably big for, I think Premier League's on NBC. Am I right on that? Yeah, I am.
I don't know.
not a fan of the footy.
That's soccer, right?
yes, it is. That's soccer. We'll talk about the matches when we get into the Lazy River. Other news, the WWE draft is coming back right around the same time as the NFL draft, which kind of tracks. We'll start on April 26th in Cincinnati, and we'll also be on April 29th in Kansas City, Missouri. Lots of hinting. Basically, hey, we just had our big event. Now we're going to re-scramble all the rosters.
I'm keeping an open mind on this, especially with the post-McMahon era. I think this is a really awesome opportunity for the writers to be able to really reset the roster and start writing the storylines and things that they want to do. If WrestleMania 40 was the start of the Paul Levesque era, as is being memed by the company, then this draft, I think, is going to be the opening salvo for a lot of new storylines and a lot of new character development inside of the company leading into our next WrestleMania.
All right, it's time for me to take a bit of a shot at WWE. I liked WrestleMania weekend. I thought it was very fun, very entertaining. I can even get past this being a new era, a Renaissance era, or the Paul Levesque era. We don't need a thank you, Triple H, or thank you, Hunter. Chance, you don't need to simp. You don't need to simp.
Can we stop it? Like it looks bad. It looked bad when Vince did it. I think everyone who listens to the show would agree with that.
You know what? If you get anything from the show, we are anti-corporate fealty.
Oh yeah. Especially when it's like using your own show to praise you. Like it's like getting a thank you.
That's their job. That is your job, is to give us wrestling content, Mr. Wrestling Corporation. I am not going to thank you for doing your job.
Thank you for entertaining us. Could you imagine like the cast of a show just coming out after an above average show and getting praise from the audience? Like, thank you, Buffy, or I don't even know what.
You get a standing ovation for community theater or something.
But that's like after a theater performance.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah. But like, that's like, you know what it's like? It's like not bringing out the cast to take a final bow, but instead bringing out the impresario of the opera. to like come out and take the bow. It's like,
you know, if you drive a Lexus, you don't pass a Lexus dealership, stop your car and start chanting, Thank you, Lexus. Yeah, you don't do that. So it's just. Although now I kind of want to.
Every time I pass a Subaru dealership now, I'm going to go like, thank you, Subaru, dude, honk my horn.
And they'll just look at you weird.
I'm loving this Impreza though, guys. Loving it.
It's going to be a shortened news thing because there's so much Lazy River and so much content from this past weekend to get through.
Do you want banter then?
We got a lot to talk about. Okay. So I'm just trying to get through all this. Aki Bono, who was part of WrestleMania 21 against Big Show, passing away. And then in terms of talent deals, Brian Cage announced he has quote-unquote signed a quote-unquote long-term deal with AEW and that his agent was negotiating between both AEW and WWE. I have my thoughts on that. And then Matt Hardy's deal with AEW has run out, so he can go crying back to Vince saying, hey, one last run for me and my brother.
He can't go crying back to Vince.
Oh, that's right.
And that's not actually an option that he has available to him.
That's actually correct, yeah. Hey, you know.
That would actually be very funny that if Matt doesn't realize what's going on in the news, it calls up Vince anyways and asks for a final run for him and Jeff.
So, you know, I have my doubts on the Matt Hardy one because he had a new deal in front of him and then he didn't sign it, which I think is kind of ballsy given age and wear and tear and the fact that he's moving in slow motion. But I think everybody kind of thought there'd be at least one last Hardys versus Christian and Adam Copeland match. I don't think we're getting that. I think they're going to run back to WWE at their first chance if they can as a team for quote unquote one last run. And then that one last run won't be satisfying enough. So they'll try.
Yeah, but we can finally get the Karrion Kross and Jeff Hardy rematch that we've all been itching for.
Well, if Jeff Hardy goes to NXT, maybe.
Possibly. I think the final testament
we're down there now. I think they may be staying there for this draft, but who knows?
So we know about Jeff's problems. He might actually need a refresher course on where the hard camera is.
Yeah. That'll do it for hard news. Cause we're just going to go through like a lot of the matches over the weekend. And then of course, AEW Dynamite, which was that, this is baffling in so many ways. Although Raw after Mania did 2.3 million average, which is a monster number for them. Things are hot in the company. I would say that Stand and Deliver, night one and night two of WrestleMania, all were very good. I wouldn't say they were great or outstanding, although out of all three of them, night two of WrestleMania was, if I could combine night one of last year's WrestleMania and night two of this year's WrestleMania, I'd have a super show that I'd have as comfort food every time I wanted to turn on a pay-per-view. I'll start our Lazy River of Wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we saw, and we saw a lot this week. I will start with this, Chris. What was your, not the best, but what was your favorite match of the weekend?
It's tricky because I'm trying to just see if there's anything that I liked more. You know what it was? It was Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. In particular, the entire fin. Like, one, the match was very good. Two, the segment afterwards with McIntyre and Punk was absolutely delightful.
Yes.
And really, really, really solid and complete storytelling. Very layered and satisfying. Drew McIntyre finally gets his big world championship win in front of a crowd of people. He gets to do it in front of his wife, but it's this monkey's paw thing for him because he just can't let go this feud with CM Punk. And so that does end up, like, the obvious sort of Chekhov's gun here is that Punk being out there cost him the match with Seth, thus costing him the world championship. Okay. This is so much more clever, where it's the fact that McIntyre elected to go over to CM Punk.
Yes.
And antagonize and push the buttons and push the buttons and push the buttons. And because of that, that ended up biting him in the ass. Like, yeah, of course Punk was responsible for his part, but it's that move that bit him in the ass. I just found it so narratively satisfying. I love Drew McIntyre.
I'm laughing over the phrase CM Punk was obviously responsible for his part, because that seemed to carry all week.
Yes. No, well, I perhaps, Jeff, I phrased some of this in a way that sets things up for our discussion of later story, too, because, no, I actually think that there are interesting sort of literary-ish parallels between the McIntyre and Punk interaction and how AEW chose to re-engage with CM Punk and how that played out for both of them, in my opinion. But yes, in this storyline, I just thought it was really great. Priest ends up winning the title. They have a great match, really great post-match interaction. I found that to be a very solid piece of business.
I think my favorite match was probably Sammy and Gunther.
Oh, it was a good match. It was a good match.
I mean, and that, my friends, is the time to pull out a big move you haven't used since coming over to WWE, where it was outlawed. When he pulled the brainbuster out, I marked like a kid. I don't know. I mean, I hadn't seen that in years, and I'd seen that live at PWG shows and stuff like that. So, I mean, that was pretty awesome. We'll start with a stand and deliver, and I'll just read through the results and give a couple of quick hits, and then anything that stood out to you. Joe Gacy beat Sean Spears.
Baron Surprising. Cole-
Yeah, it was okay. It was okay.
Well, it's just surprising because it's like, I don't know what they're doing with Gacy, and it seemed like Spears was the guy that they're building all this story around with Rich Holland and everything. So I don't know. It's strange.
No, I agree. Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker beating Axiom and Nathan Frazier. I thought the match Tuesday was a little bit better. It seemed like Frazier was kind of rushing things a bit, but I still really loved this match quite a bit. These two teams just gel for me. I don't know about you.
I agree. I think both teams have good chemistry amongst themselves and with each other as like, you know, competitors too. Frazier and Axiom have good backstage chemistry, and obviously the Wolf Dogs do. It's hard not to enjoy the like bro friendship of Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker, where like neither one of them wants to really admit that they like each other.
Rumor is they may be keeping them together on the main roster for a little bit.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, even if they start demobilizing them as a tag team, I would just keep them together as friends. I think Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker sort of bring out really good personality qualities in both of them. And obviously the goal here is going to be to push Breakker because he's awesome. I think Corbin there is like the mentor, and then maybe have him, you know, eventually have him turn on. But like there's no money in Baron Corbin versus Bron Breakker. So I wouldn't like turn Corbin on Breakker either.
No, but they will eventually. And
yeah,
you know that because that's how they build everybody.
Historically have built stuff. We'll see.
No, I still think Hunter has the WWE system in him. So it's one of those things where I think that's the play they're going to do. Obafemi beating Dijak and Briggs. Hoss fight. Briggs has a couple of broken ribs from that thing. This was just this was Dijak fighting for his life almost literally against these other two who were just a little geeked to be on a pay-per-view, I would say.
Femi's very green. And when there's like a little bit of like the old school, like early Van Vader thing where like he used to just hit people way too hard.
Yes.
And Femi does that. Briggs has been trying to show something. So like there's a little bit more of that too, and I think he had that like big show like nerves thing going on. The result
I'll do things I don't quite know how to do, but it's a big show, so let's just go.
These are things that maybe I pull off 66% of the time in practice. I'm gonna give it a shot because that's better than 50-50. Like, nah, that's not where you want to be.
That's perfect. The six-woman tag, Fallon Henley, Kalani Jordan, Thea Hale, beat Izzy Dame, JC Jane, and Kiana James. I thought this over-delivered because I had very low expectations. JC, Kiana, Fallon were, you know, they're solid. Kalani is learning. Thea, decent. Izzy wasn't bad. She's gonna be once she learns how to play monster, kind of, because I think that's her role. I think she's gonna be fine. But I mean, this didn't suck. Let's put it that way. I you know, Thea Hale wins with her arm bar that she learned, and I thought that went a decent way. It let's put it this way, it did not offend me. I thought the mistake here was putting the two women's matches back to back.
I still think it's very funny that Thea Hale has this like one lingering piece of characterization from her like 2 week interaction with the No Quarter Catch crew where she picked up the arm bar.
Yes, that is. Speaking of No Quarter Catch crew, Drew Gulak taking off the branding for now.
They're investigating. Not appearing on this show, Drew Gulak.
They're investigating his handshakes, as we talked about last week.
Yeah, you know, especially in the light of that, you know, I pulled out the scales on the show last week, and now the scales are tilting more towards Gulak was doing something.
Yeah,
he was doing something. The tweet was bad. Him not being on the show this week. All right. Yeah. I thought Rousey not being able to recall the name sort of belied a certain thing, but nah, I'm now the other way completely.
Yeah. I'm kind of that way.
New facts have changed my mind.
Roxanne Perez defeated Lyra Valkyria by submission for the NXT Women's Championship. I don't know. Are we gonna get into NXT maybe after we do the Mania stuff? Because I kind of want to talk about that match with Natty. But this started slow, but I think the last third really picked up and really got there eventually. It was just one of those things where it started weird, and it's a little bit of Lyra, how she works is kind of almost, I'm going to punch, but I'm going to let you know I'm punching and then I'll punch you type of thing. So there's a little bit of hesitation on her moves at times. It gets weird. I still don't understand Roxanne Perez as a heel. I don't like it, but I get it.
Yeah. Perez has a much better, let's call it a wrestling cadence as a heel.
Yes. No,
than
yes.
Valkyria's baby face cadence, which I also kind of latched onto as weird. Like, you sort of nailed it. It's like there's this herky jerk big telegraph thing that, like, of course, wrestling has like some telegraph, Drew McIntyre counting down, you know, the Claymore kick, that sort of thing. But like, it's like that with everything where like the arm like double pumps and like double clutches.
Yes.
And her offense feels without direction.
Yes.
That there's not a purpose, like it's not purposeful offense. And you know, while I don't love Perez as a heel, one thing I will say about her as a heel is I felt there was a lot more purpose to her offense. Heels have a lot more of that going in their natural advantage. But I still think a babyface needs to have some sort of game plan that's of like makes sense, that we can see at home, and then that gets disrupted by the heel.
Ilya Dragunov beat Tony D'Angelo. This was the story match that they're trying to tell where he's the honorable dirtbag.
I love Ilya. I hated this angle. Ilya
I didn't
was
like
also,
this angle either.
Ilya was also fantastic, I thought, on NXT this week. But this match was friggin' stupid because Tony D'Angelo has been willing to throw Ilya Dragunov in a trunk after using Crucifino and Stax to kidnap him. He has been willing to send out Stax in a kamikaze mission, essentially, to go and injure Ilya Dragunov leading into this match. He has been dishonorable throughout the campaign to try to defeat Ilya Dragunov, and it's like, in the final match, he has this crisis of conscience, and it's completely unearned. It's not like Ilya Dragunov got in his head in the lead-up promo. It's like, what type of leader do you want to be, Tony? What, how do you see, like, which would have been a terrible promo, by the way. It wouldn't have been good. But like, at least something where Ilya Dragunov rattles Tony D'Angelo in some way would have made some sense. In this case, they even went after his hand. They injured his hand leading into this. I thought Though I would not have been a huge fan of it, I thought the clear story that needed to happen here was Tony D'Angelo cheats, and maybe he wins the title because of it. But like the Tony D'Angelo family did way too many heel things on the way to this to have this
moral
redemption arc.
No, I would agree. It was unearned. And then Trick Williams defeated Carmelo Hayes. This kind of under-delivered for me.
Yeah, it was.
It really did. It was there, and to the point where I'm now a bit, because we can go to the follow-up on NXT if you want. I think that's a good way to do this. We're just going back to it, pretty much.
NXT.
We now have Hayes, Williams, and Dragunov in kind of a weird triangle. I think they're not quite sure who they're bringing up, but I think they may end up bringing all three of them up eventually. We had Ilya show up on Raw, beating Nakamura, and that's actually going to be my surprise call for the draft. I think Nakamura goes to NXT to help Julia with English and acclimate to the United States. I think that's might happen there.
And maybe they bring him down to have a program with Dragunov.
Yes.
That would actually be a fantastic takeover sort of program for them to, you know, do as a one-off or even a two-off sort of thing, quick feud.
Right, and the program they're going to be doing is they're saying, okay, Ilya and Trick, if Trick loses against Ilya, he leaves NXT.
And I think Trick's leaving. And because I think the telegraph's already here, Carmelo Hayes costs Trick Williams the match next week. Trick doesn't win the title.
I think he gets him DQ'd. I think it's even better. I think Carmelo comes in and starts attacking Ilya, and that makes Trick lose. So he's gone.
Yep.
And I think the payoff is Melo and
Ilya
Dragunov
have one last match, and Ilya sends Melo packing.
Yeah. So Melo gets drafted, thinks he's in the clear, and then all of a sudden Trick gets drafted to the same show. And then it's like, oh no.
I actually think he needs to stop being a heel. I don't think heel Melo really works.
I think cocky heel Melo works. And I put out there that maybe you just retcon this and you bring up Melo and Trick as a team.
Yeah.
Because
they need to work it out.
Yeah, and Melo's already lost on SmackDown, and he's been seen a couple times losing on SmackDown. That might be look, we get that NXT is true. Well, what about all the character work they did? Look, in the Vince era, they forgot all about it.
I don't think you have to forget about it. I think they can have a backstage segment where they decide. I think basically my sort of vision of this is Dragunov sends them both packing, and it's when Dragunov sends them both packing that they finally realize, okay, we need to have a talk. Like, let's finally sit down and hash this shit out. You know?
Yeah. And just another note on NXT, that was the best natty I've seen in a while against Roxanne Perez. I thought that was a really strong match on that one. Natty can bring it out sometimes, and when she's allowed to be a little bit more serious, just the chops to the chest and the belly, and you could just see Roxanne was not having a fun time taking them. I enjoyed that for what it was too.
I just hate that all of this is happening at the expense of Lola Vice. Like, Lola Vice is so lost in this, like, booking and stuff.
Her part is terrible on this, and really what they should do is, no offense to Electra Lopez, but Lola Vice is probably a better replacement now, but she's nowhere near ready to go to the main roster. Electra Lopez shouldn't be on the main roster. I'm not the biggest fan of Zelina Vega, but yeah, it's very weird, and the Lola Vice involvement in this story didn't do much for me.
When did you turn against Zelina Vega? I thought Zelina and Andrade were always sort of a money combo.
Well, they're a money combo, but right now Zelina's not with him.
Yeah, but so, I mean, she's not bad.
No, it was a fun act when she was a second, but then she became a wrestler on the main roster. Hey, that's when I turned on her.
Well, yeah, no, she's too. She doesn't work as a heel wrestler.
No, she does not. It's very odd. But you know, the occasional Hurricanrana, sure, I can deal.
Yeah, with. Yeah, no, as a heel manager, she can do all those high flying moves, and it makes sense because she's on the outside. She's always getting to take advantage of people who are beaten down. But as an actual heel wrestler, it's weird. She's so small.
Quick respite in between. I did watch, if you get a chance, find Paul Heyman's unedited Hall of Fame speech. It's one of the most hilariously profane performances by a thing. Did you get access to it at all?
I have not, no.
Okay, no, but F-bombs. He puts on the... puts on the duster and the ball cap and cuts an ECW one night stand style promo. Lots of funny anecdotes, lots and lots of praise for the, again, Paul Levesque era and, you know, how he is a Paul Levesque guy now. it was surreal in more than one way. And yeah, but we'll go through WrestleMania now. Night one obviously was a little colder than night two, in terms of temperature. And I think it affected a lot of people's performances, to be honest with you, especially in the opening match. I thought night one was a little flat, to be honest with you.
Well, I liked the cold really affected. I think it was McAfee who didn't have good cold gear, and Michael Cole did. I enjoyed that.
I love that they keep mentioning the cold on the broadcast, because to me, I mean, everybody's like, man, I wish they'd stop complaining about that. That's where WWE booked it. No, that's where Vince booked it. It was Vince's idea to have a 2-day thing after doing the debacle in New York when it was when they almost had snow for that WrestleMania. Now we're doing two nights in Philly in early April, and it's freezing out there. And to me, every time they said they did a temperature update, I thought that was a shot at Vince. It's like, thanks, Vince, for sticking us in this cold stadium.
Yeah, I didn't ever hear it as a brag. I always heard it as a, this is actually just kind of brutal. And like, they had discussions about how it might affect in-ring performances and stuff too.
Yeah, but some people were saying there's heaters in the posts and stuff like that. I go, I don't
what
think
is
so.
That going to do when you're out there in spandex?
In your underwear. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's
tough. Also, all those bumps hurt more because it's cold.
Yes. And speaking of being cold, Rhea Ripley defeated Becky Lynch by pinfall. Lynch fighting off strep and a fever, allegedly, according to the kind of thing. This was fine. It just didn't hit the peak that I wanted it to. It was a Becky Lynch match, and I think Becky Lynch doesn't necessarily get heated in her thing. She's a star and everything. It made Rhea look like $1 million. I thought she was very good in it. It was just one of those things where it's like, I thought I was expecting a little bit more of a match. I thought I was expecting a little bit more of believing that Becky may overcome Rhea, but I never really got into that.
I never bought in at any point in this program that Becky was going to win. They didn't do a very good job sort of making the case for why you'd want her to beat Rhea. What is the Becky future that we were all supposed to be imagining? So it sort of made the match a foregone conclusion match for me, which whenever we have one of those, they tend to grade harder. There they have to really sort of like work their asses off and just really deliver something, even though I know where we're going. This just didn't get there for me.
Six-pack ladder match for the tag team titles, the various ones. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller getting the SmackDown titles, a rather anticlimactic moment. And then Awesome Truth, as I kind of opined last week. Yep, they got the Raw ones.
And exciting for R-Truth to get his WrestleMania moment. And there was some, no, straight up, like you could tell it meant something to him.
I'm laughing at the Raw follow-up where they just go right back to him thinking he's part of the freaking Judgment Day.
He is. He defeated Jordan Devlin. They had a match, Jeff. The match had consequences. One of those consequences is that Jordan Devlin is not actually an official member of the Judgment Day. He's just buds. And R-Truth is a member of the Judgment Day. They just don't like hanging out with him. It's honestly kind of sad.
A lot of, the usual crazy tag team ladder stuff, putting people's backs in peril. Dunn and Bate and Gargano and Ciampa doing most of the quote-unquote work
I always love it that the losing teams are the ones who end up killing themselves for these matches. It hardly seems fair.
Well, it's kind of like the whole thing where it's like once you get off injury, they put you in Money in the Bank or something to prove that you're healed. Like Sin Cara and Sheamus and Luke Harper and
Have Theory and Waller right there, who are two young hateable heels. Why are they not getting most of this?
Oh well, Grayson did, and I mean, but Grayson's also took that horrible thing in the ladder match in NXT too. So it's like one of those things where it's like he's just willing to do all that. I did dig the Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, Rocky, and Apollo Creed gear. Always nice.
I thought all of the Philly tributes were actually a lot of fun.
There's too many Eagles tributes for me.
Okay, that. But I'm talking like, you know, like the Sami Zayn storyline being a tribute to Rocky. Yes. I thought they actually had a lot of like clever little tribute things going on in this show that made this a very Philly show.
Rey Mysterio and Andrade with the LWO beat Santos Escobar and Dirty Dominic Mysterio with Angel Berto and Electra Lopez.
Why?
Party match. I don't understand why they this finish was, but hey, Joaquin Wilde got to do his catapult spot. Looked just as impressive as you thought. I agree. I don't understand. why don't you let the heels win here?
No, Dom should always beat his dad.
Yes.
Yeah. No, like that should be the story. Like,
and he should cheat to do it
every single time. It's like, and that's sort of like the running joke. Like Dom's a shit wrestler and Ray's a legendary one. Yeah. But for whatever reason, he always beats his dad every single time. I think that should have been the story. Breaking that streak was criminal to me.
Jey Uso beat Jimmy Uso by pinfall.
This stunk.
It stunk, but the best thing I could say is they learned from this mistake in the Bayley EO match, where they tried to do the melodrama there, and Bayley EO just punched her in the face right after doing it. Yeah, this was an idea that should have been shot down. The melodrama story.
They were having a decent little match. Yeah. Up until then, the Spears looked good. But once we got into the Shawn Michaels theater,
That's a good terminology for it right there. Shawn Michaels theater.
Yeah, it's Shawn Michaels theater. And it killed me. It was so dumb. Because it's like, you don't actually believe for a second that they're going to just like decide that this match isn't worth it anymore, man, and hug it out and become a team and then just lose by double count out.
I thought they might become a team after this match, but not with this finish. This stunk and it took 10 minutes or 11 minutes to get there. And I didn't understand it. I thought they could have had a banger of a match and they chose to have a story match instead. And just, it was disappointing to me.
I don't think it got Jay to where he needs to be, which is like, though you had Cole at the end of the match, and I'll give him credit. He had actually a great show both nights. I thought he did some really nice calls. Yeah, no, Michael Cole was really good.
McAfee, on the other hand.
All over the place?
Yes.
But damn if he isn't entertaining.
When he is excited and engaged and being like almost the Chris Farley fan, like, oh, what's that, Michael Cole? You know, or he's like, when he's the inquisitive child, he's great. And there are times when he knows he's causing a little bit of trouble where he's also great. But there were times on this night one where he was just, he hadn't been paying attention to the product all that much. And he was just dreadful. But Michael Cole was fantastic, to get back to your point.
Yeah, no, Cole just had a really nice show on both nights. And I thought at the end of this match, the Jimmy and Jay thing, look, he did the best he could with it, which was he explained that Jey Uso needed to be Jimmy Uso because Jimmy had been costing him all these different title matches. And that is the best story that they have there. And they at least told it somewhat, but I thought that needed to be told better and more in the ring by Jay, not by Michael Cole.
Jade Cargo. Oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, Jay should have been screaming at Jimmy like, I should have been champion. Like this match really should have been Jay's catharsis of thinking about all the times where, like, he could have beaten Roman. He could have beaten Gunther. There's a bunch of different people he could have beaten. And now, of course, you know, like, man,
you know what? I want to hear that, though. I want to hear that in the build. I don't want to hear that in the middle of the match.
I'm with you on this, too. But at least I want to hear it coming from Jay and not Jim or not Michael Cole.
Yeah,
though I thought Michael Cole did a good job.
Also, my problem with the Bayley Eo match was that was just the moment that they quickly got past was like, you were never my friend, Eo. Bayley, I'm your friend. You know, it's like, Eo cracks me up in so many ways. I'll talk about that later.
I mean, having Eo do the melodrama stuff, why did we think that was going to...
Well, we quickly got past it with a punch in the face, so we'll get to it when we get to that match. Jade Cargo, Bianca Belair, and Naomi beat Damage Control, Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. Kind of went how we thought. Dakota, Asuka, and Kairi are just feeding them and making them look like $1 million.
Yeah.
Sami Zayn beat Gunther. Fantastic match. Just everything about the whole interplay of the kid and mom being backstage, kid not playing ball with the live tape, which I howled at. I always love that. I always love when kids and animals go off script and ruin things. But, you know, a little of the WWE melodrama that's to be expected where, you know, Gunther stops the match and starts yelling at the wife who's in the front row, the crying wife in the front row. Sammy's
well, but that's also part of Rocky too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, right. You know, like look, they're doing Rocky. So Sammy's wife's coming out here doing her Talia Shire tribute.
Yes, very, and she was very good doing.
No, she was really good at it. Yeah, no, she knew exactly what she needed to do there.
I loved Sammy's fire up from the mat. It looked weird at first, and then you're just like, okay, I'm into this, and you're just watching Gunther. Oh my God, what am I gonna do with this guy? Look, I want Gunther to get elevated into this main title picture because he's just so fantastic. Just a fantastic 15-minute match all the way around, I thought.
I don't think it's going to be very long before Gunther comes out and powerbombs Cody Rhodes.
And then the main event of night one, the Bloodline, Rock and Roman Reigns beat Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. I'm not going to call him freaking here. 45 minutes, including entrances.
Right. Well, including entrances. So yes. Like I refuse to count entrances in match length. Like, because because it becomes disproportional, when you're comparing other shows, for example, right? The actual match was about 20 something minutes because they did 17 minutes of introductions here.
Yes.
Literally. And they were excellent. The presentation on them was wonderful.
Yes, the spectacle but that's not
I'm not going to count that as match time, is what I'm saying.
No,
so it's
no,
like
that, no.
I've heard it like The Rock's second longest match ever. No, he had like a 22-minute match here. It was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was really entertaining. It went where you thought it was going to go. The Rock is just so wonderful.
I want to talk about The Rock a little bit because my favorite thing about the final boss character. And this will be no surprise to anybody because it's one of the best things too. It's just how profane he is.
Yes.
Just F-bombs, S-bombs, mother effers all over. It's like when you do like low-level improv or short-form improv, it's what people do when you tell them do something in the style of David Mamet or do something like you have Tourette's. It's just, it has nothing to do with the actual styles. It's just, they're just going to say a lot of swear words. That's all Rock does is he just, when he's walking down the aisle, even it's just mother effer. I'm going to F you up. F, 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 S, F.
I love it. I think it's super entertaining.
Oh, I do too. I love it.
No, you have that. And it's being juxtaposed against like, I am on the board. I am a great movie star. I am a respectable guy.
I am corporate.
And the second he comes out the curtain or does anything as a wrestler, it's like the most not corporate stuff in the world. This character is one of the most entertaining Dwayne Johnson characters he's ever come up
it's
with.
The most for me.
Yeah,
more than Strudel and
you're right. Yeah, like I mean, yeah, maybe one of the very early, when he was still heel, like that very early phase. But yeah, no, like he's so good as this
Actually, corporate rock might be my favorite, where it's like, what do you, rock thinks you should fire him. Just, yeah, okay, that was pretty good. But yeah, that set the table for night two, which to me, possibly the best one night of WrestleMania. I'll put it up against night one from last year. I'll put it up. I won't say it's the best, because for me, 17 is still the best. For others, maybe 30 is the best. Just a fun, fun night of wrestling. Starting with Drew McIntyre versus Seth friggin' Rollins for the World Heavyweight title. Best part of this was Punk on commentary right at the end of the Seth Rollins. What would you call this? The Mardi Gras line for him when he was coming out, his entrance?
Oh, what'd he say?
Oh, no, no. Oh, here's what he says. He said, looks like a bunch of mummers. Prince Caris was also a mummer. That is a Smoky Mountain Wrestling reference from 1994 about the character Prince Caris, who was a giant mummy. And I howled. I'm like, five people will get that joke, Punk, but I appreciate it.
Now that you've explained it to me, like, that's like ringing a vague bell about Prince Caris. Yes.
Yeah, no. James Mitchell as Daryl Van Horn was his... what was his manager. And I just remember on his debut or his second match, one of the great lines in commentary, because he came on commentary to talk about it. You know, it's just the giant mummy character, can't move for crap, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's like my good friend Peter North told me, when you're huge, who needs technique?
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
I'm like, that showed up on a professional wrestling show in 1994.
I liked how Seth's costume changes seemed to actually have some sort of narrative coherence to his mindset now, like him turning back into Shield Seth or whatever. They actually used it in a way where yes. it was telling a story, and that he's doing this almost like this whole weird wearing strange clothing thing that he's been doing for 2.5 years is essentially what it would be like if you had a friend who was doing this. It's an identity crisis. No, I like it. He's okay. So he's still successful. And you can have an identity crisis and have a crisis of the self and also still be enjoying success at the same time. I like it. That part of what he is working through with his engagements with Roman, and that Roman still has not been able to let go himself, which they've also revisited here, is that like this Shield breakup really like kind of, you know, scarred them both, and that they've never fully healed from the breakup of the Shield.
I'd say a good match. I wouldn't say a great match. Drew, outstanding here. And then, of course...
It was so entertaining. As I said earlier in the show, I just thought it was a completely entertaining piece of business. I was pleasantly surprised with the twists and turns of, like, McIntyre wins the title, and then he screws himself out of the title. Yeah. I didn't see that coming.
The whole interplay between him and Punk was fantastic. Punk blowing a wife to Drew, or blowing a kiss to Drew's wife or girlfriend was fantastic after screwing him. Of course, Damian Priest comes down, cashes in. There's no the, are you sure you want to cash in, Damian Priest? No, they just did it. Thank God. One move, 1, 2, 3. I did like the little touch though before the cash in after the match where Seth Rollins kind of gives, you know, the nod to Drew saying take care of the title, etc., you know, as kind of like a professional courtesy, as if they're going to try and make this the workman's title, but then they do the cash in, which is funny in its own right.
Right. No, it's a good bait and switch where they really sold you on this idea that Drew, you know, ultimately was able to prevail. The bad guy wins. But like he instead gets hoisted by his own petard.
And then a match that was not only off the rails, but off the wagon as well. The Pride, Bobby Lashley, Angelo Dawkins, Montez Ford would be fab. Beat the final testament, Karrion Kross, Occam Razor with Scarlett and Paul Ellering by pinfall. Snoop Dogg came out to do commentary, and it was just nothing but weed jokes, booze jokes. Oh my! Snoop doesn't watch the product, so he doesn't know who the hell these people are for the most part. And he's just like, oh my God, look at that. I remember. And then he like would drop some like Bubba Ray Dudley or Dudley's reference, or because he watched them smash with the tables, you know, B-Fab is like, oh, that's my girl. So McAfee's over there trying to get him to say the N-word, I think.
Yes. the most white guy moment that Pat McAfee has ever had in his life is sitting next to Snoop Dogg and trying to coax him to say the N-word. Like, yeah, say it. Say the word. I want to hear it. Like, geez Louise.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg. There's some words I can't say on here. No, you can say it. Go ahead.
Seriously, though, like one of the most cringe moments that McAfee has had on commentary in his entire tenure in the company.
This was a low point of the show, but he got better as the night went on.
You would have to. Well, the only way he could get worse is by actually saying the N-word.
Thanks, Norm. the real problem was. No. LA Knight beat AJ Styles in what I've come to expect as a WWE style WrestleMania match. I mean, it did not offend me. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great either.
No, and it doesn't give you big hope that LA Knight's going anywhere.
The crowd reaction was great for him, though.
I know, but in a dynamic where you have Sami Zayn as Intercontinental Champion, you have Damian Priest, who is not really a heel, as your world champion. I mean, he is, but he isn't. The fans like him too much. And then you have Cody Rhodes as, you know, the champion. Well, where does LA Knight fit in? He seems to me to be like a guy who needs to be in a title picture to be anything.
LA Knight will get better with this crowd as soon as The Rock leaves. I mean, he's that guy. He's the guy. Okay, I can get the crowd fired up with a promo. He's the promo guy, but he's not as good as The Rock on promos. But once The Rock leaves, then there's really nobody good on promos other than really Kevin Owens for the most part.
Well, yeah, I mean, LA Knight's not even doing a cover of the good version of The Rock.
It's no, that's just, he's covering the wrong albums. Logan Paul beat Kevin Owens and Randy Orton for the United States Championship. I really liked this match a lot. Logan Paul still continues to amaze me. I don't care if you don't like him as a human being. As a wrestler, this is his element. Jerk heel, doing amazing things. I can do without his friends being part of the gig. Although Randy Orton just beat the crap out of his iShow Speed kid. I love late stage comedy.
The only thing I like about the friends is watching Randy Orton beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Randy Orton really enjoyed that job.
I wasn't a huge Orton fan at his peak. I understood he was very, you know, he was very athletic and all that other stuff, but I always found him kind of droll and kind of, you know, going through the motions and, okay.
Oh, I mean, 2013, let's not forget where the overall consensus opinion on Randy Orton's work was. Like at 2013, 2014, we were getting boring chants at Randy on a constant basis to the point where Randy was getting so irritated by it in his title matches that he would do things to make matches deliberately more boring, like the rest holds and stuff.
That was a
byproduct of years of build. And so then that said,
old man Orton, comedy old man Orton, I love just the first time when it's like Owens and Orton now have to go at it because Orton tried to pull an RKO on Owens. It's like, is it time now? Do we have to do it? The whole thing with the golf cart where he's telling Kevin Owens to slow down because his old man comedy Orton kind of playing off of how big of a star he used to be entertains me to no end, Chris.
Yes. I like his character. I think
Riddle, who's a piece of garbage, I that interplay, it was always really, he's playing straight man to this absolute doofus. So yeah.
Right. No, he was entertaining as that. I think both Orton and Cena have now found themselves very comfortable veteran roles where they're not going to be stepping on toes and they can still do something really interesting and meaningful to the card and really bring something to whatever match they're in.
Aunt Pam defeated Io Sky. Oh, Chris, the smile on my face after this match. Look, I am a Bayley fanatic. I think Bayley is the best bell-to-bell women's wrestler WWE has probably had. No offense to anybody else in terms of building blocks, in terms of that. The reason why I loved this match so much, Chris, is it was the simplicity of it. We didn't have a lot of high spots or anything like that. EO got to be EO for the first time since NXT, which was great. But Bayley got this crowd invested by selling a knee to the point where I was worried after that first dive where she came up a little bit limping. I thought, okay, she's hurt one of her legs again. Let's see what happens here. But no, she was selling. And she continued to sell. And she continued to do a Ricky Morton type of sell where it's like she's coming back and EO's just beating on her and doing high spots and doing the three moonsaults and stuff like that. And here she comes. The rose plant is not a good move. She should probably have won with Bayley to belly now that she's a babyface. But to me, this match was the best women's match on either night. And I thought she did great. I thought EO looked spectacular here. There was no shenanigans from damage control at all, which really helped it be a nice one-on-one match. And afterwards, Bayley and Sasha had a bit of a posse of young women in terms of coming up in the business who were super fans. So she's at the press conference and she's wearing a t-shirt of Jada Stone, an indie wrestler who used to make custom shoes for her and Sasha. Billy Starks was a big Bayley fan coming up. She won a title over the weekend. You have Roxanne and JC and a few others down at NXT. She has a army of young women working the indies and working NXT that idolized her. I was happy she got her moment. I kind of wanted a little bit more. You can't really get that kind of, you know, you'll go into it. I almost took your point there accidentally, and I apologize. But I was very happy with this match. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you cite some of the people who cite Bayley as an influence, and these are the more quality wrestlers of this generation, especially in the WWE class. JC Jayne and Roxanne Perez are both fantastic. I mean, obviously,
Punk and Charlotte put her over big during a stand-up with, I think, ESPN. It was that, but I mean, both Charlotte and CM Punk were like, look, she's the rock of this division. And I don't mean the wrestler of the rock. I mean, like, the foundation of this division. And she finally got her moment. So, yeah, I mean, everybody, I don't know anybody who may say a bad word about her. Maybe Alexa Bliss, but go on.
Yeah. What was my other point going to be? You tell me.
Oh, you said you can't get the kind of pre-show you were telling me about, the difference between NXT.
Pre-show. Yes. Okay. All right. I was like, wait, I was about to say something. Yeah. And that was like 2 hours ago now.
Yeah,
It's back. So I think the problem for this type of match, and especially for people who want these matches to be like elevated to that, you know, 5-star or whatever.
Tokyo Dome, Dave Meltzer special.
Yeah, big Tokyo Dome vibes here, that sort of thing. So, like, people who want that, especially out of WWE, the only product that they've ever had that's really been able to give you that, like, mini Tokyo Dome sort of vibe was the black and gold old school NXT. And you can still sort of see that even with this current NXT's presentation in flashes, bits, you know, little spurts and that sort of thing. There's something about the level of intimacy that you need, especially for a story like this, to really get off the ground. It doesn't, for me, work as a in front of 80,000 people sort of story. So it, in a way, it's like, why did the match not quite meet some people's, you know, expectations or whatever? I think part of it is that it's the wrong band for the wrong venue sort of thing.
One thing I alluded to it earlier, but something that always cracks me up is whenever EO does the yell type of thing, like, I don't know what it is, but I howl at that every time. She's the angry yell type of growling type thing that she does when she's kind of staggering. I find her staggering around thing kind of weird at times because she's still doing it, but like she did all the way down the ramp as well. But it's like when she's like, Bailey, you're mine. Ah! It's like, yes, EO, yes, you're so cute. Now go up on the top rope and do a moonsault kind of a thing. But yeah, and then the main event, which, look, this, Russ, I didn't understand. Okay, here's where the people who watch love AEW and New Japan and stuff were like, oh, it was nice of you to get an evil match on or a House of Torture match as your main event for WrestleMania. Ugh, all the run-ins and stuff. This is what WrestleMania does. This is the spectacle of WWE. They literally told you you're getting a lot of run-ins in this match. And they did it.
They told you who was going to win this match.
Yes.
With the teaser package for the DVD or the interview backstage segment thing. Like they tipped the hand on what this match was going to be entirely. The show is about the tag match enabling the Bloodline Rules match. And I can totally understand for people like, that's not necessarily the main event they want, but like we've already seen Cody and
you
Roman.
You weren't gonna get a pure wrestling technical clinic.
They already
clinic.
Did that. They already did that long match, right? They already had that match. This is finishing a story. Like it's right there in the tagline. They're not, straight up. Like I don't fault them for not having this like banger match because they told a story in two parts over two nights.
And you got the member berries, you got The Rock, you got John Cena. Well, you got John Cena. He comes down and then he does his thing and then The Rock's music hit. Cena has look of fear of God and all Rock is doing is cussing all the way down.
And then you get Undertaker, and like you get Seth Rollins trying to make
Shield.
The Shield trying to make his way down, and like that Roman Spear on Seth was brutal.
Oh, it was brutal, but
I'll tell you what, no, it got me totally amped for the next Roman Seth Rollins match. Like I'm so that I am in the house for that one already.
And I liked the follow up on Raw the next night, just to kind of complete all of our WWE talk. I thought Rock was so weirdly understated that he was far more compelling.
Yes.
Being quiet Rock. And you're just kind of like watching going, oh man, here it's kind of like, you know, Flair would do this too, where he'd be very quiet and intense. And you're like, and then he'd move to being shouty and stuff. This one was the Rock being in control the entire time, being, yeah, Cody, can I hold that belt? Great. I'm coming back for it, and I am your boss. You know, that kind of thing. Kind of like the menace.
This just feels right. No, like when he held it up, and he's like, this just feels right.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, that was so good. Getting a this is awkward chant was was lovely. I thought that meant that they did good business there, because one, I don't know that I've heard of this is awkward chant yet. I might be wrong on that. But two, I think that it means that the crowd's really on to the energy that The Rock was throwing down there. And I completely agree. I thought it was one lovely final act in this chapter of the final boss, which I as we've discussed,
sets up everything that we thought they would for next time. Sets up Rock and Roman, sets up Rock and Roman, Cody. And
yep.
That's all you want out of something.
Yes. That's the big thing for me, is that like everything is all there. They've explained everything. It doesn't matter what The Rock handed to. It could have been a bone from Dusty Rhodes' body. It doesn't actually matter. It's a MacGuffin, because it could be anything.
Yeah. It's interesting because it was reported by Dave that after the match and after he came through the curtain, Cody got the actual Rolex that Dusty pawned to send Cody and his sister out to LA to take acting lessons and to make it big. Don't know if that's true or not, but so everybody's thinking it's the watch that they gave him. Everybody in the know. I would love it to be the smashed up watch. He goes, you know what that is without even opening your hand, don't you? And so it's something to say, yeah, F you, Cody, and then he leaves. But yeah, it's a MacGuffin, and it's great. I've seen other people saying part of the tribal chief's necklace, you know, kind of thing, saying you're the tribal chief now, sort of thing. It sets up future stories. It was fine.
It doesn't matter. They can, and what they'll decide at a later point what it was too. Let's be really clear. They can have an idea of what it was on Monday, and that can completely change because they never showed the hand.
Okay, I need you to do me a favor. I need you
what?
To pull up the lineup of AEW Dynamite from this last week.
Okay.
Because we are going to go into AEW Dynamite, because as soon as, you know, all the, in the midst of all this goodwill towards WWE, Tony Khan tweets out a graphic where the Young Bucks will present the actual footage from All In of the fight between Jack Perry and CM Punk, and they will address it on their show. And everybody's kind of going, is this a bit? Are the Bucks going to do something kind of ironic? Is this a way to,
well, they did it. They did do something ironic, not what they meant, but
no,
irony did occur.
And then we're told, no, they're going to set out the real footage. And that was their marketing point, mostly for this Dynamite, other than Joe and Dustin, which is an interesting choice given that this is Cody's big week, Copeland and Penta, and Tony Storm doing a champagne toast to Thunder Rosa. Now we'll start just at the beginning. Your top three big free agents: Will Ospreay, Mercedes Moné, Okada, are all on this show, and they weren't really advertised as the focal points of your show, which to me is kind of a mistake, especially if you're going to be going after WWE, which this show, if you're a petty fan, And we know a lot of AEW fans wanted to be petty when they were on the upswing. They got their pettiness this week, Chris. Where do we want to go in order here, I guess?
Yeah, I guess so.
Joe and Dustin come out and Swerve jumps Joe, so that gets the that gets them off the board. And
yeah, the original planned card here, right, was just to tell everyone before we, because this is part of the wraparound story of the show, is we had a planned show, but things are so crazy over here that anything can happen. It was supposed to be
it goes to another point. Things are so crazy and they're off the rails, and that during the Penta and Copeland match, they had a countdown clock for when the Bucks were going to have their segment.
Which is weird, because you wouldn't have had that planned, because originally you were supposed to have a championship eliminator match between Samoa Joe and Dustin, right? It's whatever. So like it was supposed to be and then we were supposed to have Mariah May and Anna Jay too on this show. But like this show stunk.
They were on there. Well, actually, that was a pretty decent match between those two. So Penta and Adam Copeland have a match, and Copeland is Lucha Edge. And it wasn't that bad, but it went on for a long time.
It was just long. Yes. I mean, the problem with these matches is they're having like these 17, 18-minute matches that don't ever get into a second gear and don't need to be this long.
They don't elevate any emotion in there either.
No.
It's like, it was very weird.
It's just a weird usage of Copeland, too, because it's like, you know, the guy does have a lot of miles on his car. I just don't understand having him go 20 minutes to show what? He can have a completely entertaining 10-minute match.
And then we had the promo with the six men, right? And then
we go backstage to the Bucks.
And then we went backstage to the Bucks. Who... Man,
all right, here's the part of the show everyone's been waiting for.
Okay. So on paper, your theory is we're going to take this real event and we're going to bring it into the kayfabe world.
To help our company do better business.
Yes.
And that's because important. I want to circle back to that too.
But also the real reason we're doing this is we're going to show you that Punk was really the bad guy here and we're going to trash him. So they show this footage under the pretense of this whole event was on our big day as EVPs, and then it threw us off so much that FTR, his buddies, beat us in the match at All In. Okay. So they show this.
Just based off of that, kayfabe-wise, it's got to be pretty bad. wrestling is typically a pretty civil place. So, like, this is the part that kills me, right? I'm going to drop the joke here. CM Punk shoves Jack Perry, and I'm supposed to believe that two wrestlers have never seen a man shove another man when every contract signing that happens in this company results in somebody going through an effing table?
Yeah, then they show the footage.
Problem one.
Well, see, I'm still getting over the fact that they're trying to use this fight as an excuse for losing the match. They're blurring that line.
Right. Why would that affect? No, that's what I mean. If like the level of violence in kayfabe that these wrestlers are used to is like way beyond, I shoved you because I'm mad at you. People do that shit all the time in this company.
All right, Punk. Here's the bit. If you're living under a rock and you didn't see the footage, here's the deal. Punk goes backstage, and he's in Gorilla, and he's talking to Perry. Perry's playing with his hair and kind of like, oh, I don't have a problem, whatever, etc. Punk is getting a bit tired of old Gen Z Jungle Boy, or maybe even Gen Y at this point, Millennial Jungle Boy, not taking Punk super seriously. So Punk high faces him / punches him. Perry goes in for a leg, and he gets in a headlock. And
right.
Joe comes over immediately, pulls him off. Punk goes right behind the monitors and yells something at Tony Khan and storms off with Malachi Black in tow.
And Chris Hero.
Chris Hero's going, oh my God, what the heck's happening? our boy Mookie is back there giving a tour to, I think, friends of one of the people in the match. Like, yes, this is the backstage area. And all of a sudden a fight breaks out. And he's like, let's move along on the tour right now. My thought was, Chris, somebody got fired over this? Really?
Again, even outside of the world of kayfabe, it's a wrestling company. Like, we know how these wrestlers are. And they do have these sort of scuffles. My thought.
I've seen worse on a set of a Hollywood project where the producer and the director then later hugged it out the next day and said, we're so sorry for all you guys having to see this, et cetera, et cetera. Nope, we're going to HR on this one.
Right. I have a big problem with that. Just given the general dynamic of wrestling locker rooms. My primary takeaway here is that Tony Khan, the whole narrative that he is a bad leader, that he is a bad manager, it is never more evident to me than this guy hiding behind a piece of cloth, pretending that a fight isn't happening 6 feet in front of him on the other side of that cloth, or maybe even 3 or 4 feet in front of him on the other side of that cloth. And that fight is happening because if we're going to believe Phil Brooks here, and I mean, so far, I thought this video graphic evidence is supposed to be a stirring rebuttal of everything he said. And I'm not seeing that in this videotape. I see a few things that are not consistent, but it seems to me like a lot of stuff is consistent with Brooks' story. It seems like, and then believing Brooks on this, he asked Khan to deal with this, that Tony Schiavone had wanted Brooks to go and have a talk with Jack Perry about blading and some of the other stuff that he was doing in the matches. And Punk said to Khan, you need to handle this or I will. I don't really want to have to handle this. And then all of a sudden, after Khan demurred and decided not to handle it, it is now being handled in front of him before his very eyes. And he shrinks behind his little piece of cloth. And then at the end of the interaction, the way I read it is Brooks runs up to the piece of cloth, leans over it, and is looking down at Tony Khan. It's basically saying, this is your fault.
You need to do something, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't do anything about that. That's why this effing happened. I didn't think Khan was in any danger of his life. I didn't even think he was in real danger of physical harm.
Neither did I.
No, I read that. I mean, if I had been in that interaction and I had been there, I would have been screaming at Tony Khan, like, this happened because you didn't do your job. Like, this is your effing fault. But I wouldn't have been like, this is your effing fault. Punch, 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 punch. And I don't think that's what Brooks is trying to do either.
If Tony had gone out there to break up the fight, I might have thought, you know, okay, maybe he thought he was in a little bit of physical danger, even though there wasn't much of a fight.
Right. Okay, look, Tony Khan tried to go up and break apart an MMA fighter. I don't care if that MMA fighter is Phil Brooks. It's still like a big, big ask for a small man. Okay. So I would be willing to grant that if he had done that, that would have been ballsy and actually been a legitimate reason for him to believe that his physical safety was slightly imperiled. But he did not do that. He chose to hide behind his piece of cloth.
Not a monitor, a piece of cloth. Okay.
No, because there's the monitor, yeah, and then there's a little piece of cloth, and nothing is real on the other side of the piece of cloth. The only thing that's real is what's on your side of the piece of cloth. Everything else on the other side is your imagination.
And then we get Will Ospreay, who is either encouraged or champing at the bit by management to come out.
How do you not look at this show as clearly being greenlit by Khan or management?
I do.
Samoa Joe from the Samoan beating the roads all the way down. I'm sorry. Like, no, there's too many coincidences for them to all be coincidences.
I agree. Up next is Will Ospreay, who I also think was a little gotten to. And look.
No way.
Triple H goes on Pat McAfee's show. And he basically says they basically ask about these big free agents that AEW's gotten. And he basically says, look, there are guys who, there's some young guys who haven't proven themselves, and they'd rather get the lighter schedule than come to WWE, which is a grind. And maybe they can't embrace the grind type of a thing. And look, this was a cheap shot by Triple H in many ways at AEW and its talent, and Will Ospreay, because basically the thing was AEW offered more money, but they also offered Will Ospreay the chance. He didn't have to move to the States. He could stay in the UK and he could come back and forth and do shows at his leisure. Triple H does this, and I'm not saying it's correct. I hate it. I hate the pettiness from number one as much as I hate number two. But number two's always going to be petty. Number one's just going to take shots at them. And I get that too. But
well, number one didn't even take shots at them, right? Like
that this... was a shot at Ospreay.
The Hunter thing, yes. The rest of this show, though, was Phil Brooks, an employee of the company number one, getting to company number two so bad that they dedicate an entire episode to him.
Yes.
And building up a fantastic feud for Jack Perry and CM Punk to eventually have in WWE for a ton of money.
Oh, and ratings were up 17% because Punk was the star of this show. That's
and people were
me.
Chanting for CM Punk at the end of this.
Yes.
Yeah. So this was so short-sighted. AEW's never going to be able to capitalize on the CM Punk Jack Perry business that they built here. WWE is.
Yeah, and so Ospreay comes out and basically says that the only grind Triple H had was on the boss's wife. Okay, great. I mean, I get that the people who are AEW tribalists were digging this promo. You know, the tone was great.
Hey,
these
were banger jokes 20 years ago, and they're banger jokes now. That's how it works.
Yeah, I was like, okay, great, we're on to that. And then we have the six-man with Hook, Chris Jericho, and Shibata versus Shane Taylor. Is it Productions or Promotions? I can't remember. But Shibata takes the pin against Lee Moriarty. Now, there's two things wrong with this. Number one, commentary is hyping. This is the biggest win of Lee Johnson's career, Lee Moriarty's career in AEW. But all they're showing is Hook and Jericho bickering at one another. Number two, we just used Shibata to put over our main event at our pay-per-view where both Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson beat Shibata to make it a quote-unquote big deal that these two would now be facing each other at Dynasty.
And I think they've invoked like the Okada Shibata interactions too. So nothing makes me more excited to see Shibata finally get back to Okada than watching him take the L to Lee Moriarty.
Yeah, and not only that, they're doing a rematch on Collision with Lee one-on-one Moriarty versus Shibata.
Well,
so
he'll probably lose
50,
that.
50-50.
Yeah, right.
50-50.
Yeah.
After putting over on commentary, biggest win of his career, and there's no follow-up to it. Okay, great. Moving on, we get the Anna Jay, or no, Anna Jay's not next. Did we get Mercedes? Never mind, it doesn't matter the order. I'm just going to say it. The Mercedes Moné interview, where she's obviously reading a teleprompter. I'm sorry
if you're going to pay her this much money, have her memorize a script.
My thing is, I now have to say my optimism was wrong and my concern was real that Mercedes and maybe even Jen Pepperman are system people. They're WWE system people. And Mercedes can't cut a promo outside of the quote-unquote Sasha Banks heel character. She can't talk normally.
If you took away that Sasha Banks heel character, like if she was legally not allowed to still just basically be doing Sasha Banks in substance, she'd have nothing right now.
She'd be so damn lost right now.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
I know that one's going to hit hard.
No, she's fantastic. She's fantastic in the ring.
In the ring, but like as a character, she has no ideas. She's got no ideas. She's living on like the same old riffs.
Well, it's scared to do something else because this is what you're known for. And I get that too, but I was just like, you have the freedom to do whatever you want. And now we're doing WWE style promos again in this company, which does not want these, and they may boo her out of the building, to be honest with you.
And more importantly, in a lot of cases, you know, these sort of character driven, you know, promos, which are not her strength either. A lot of cases she'll be going up against people who are not people who are going to be giving her a whole hell of a lot. Your Deonna Purrazzos or your Rihos or whatever. Outside of Toni Storm, you don't have a lot of people who can be the big character foil sort of thing for her.
So we get the champagne toast. It's also a little sports entertainment-y. We blind Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa doesn't realize it's Toni Storm beating her up and thinks it's Deonna Purrazzo. All right. Kind of dumb. That leads to Mariah May and Anna Jay, who I thought had a decent match, but then the post-match beatdown by Anna Jay leads to Mina Shirakara coming out, making the save. We're supposed to know who she is because I think she was on a Collision. And she was on a Ring of Honor, and she was on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Her music hit, she comes down.
And you can see by the numbers, people don't miss those shows.
Oh, yeah, and nobody responded. And then, of course, Excalibur explained she was in Club Venus in Stardom in a stable together. And she feeds Mariah another glass of champagne, and they make out. Here's my dilemma here in talking about this right now, Chris, because I could very easily go to this is exploitative, like the HLA in the Attitude Era, which it kind of felt like. And I would get pushback from AEW fanatics who would tell me, no, you can have well-written lesbian storylines.
This is not well-written. Well, we're just going to stop right there. I don't even touch lesbian storyline. Spare me on this well-written shit. No way. No way. Take a hike.
Although, you know, if those two want to make out, I got
I'm
no
not
going to
say, hey, anyone can make out with whoever. If they're both consenting, I don't care who's making out with who.
Yes.
Especially just, if they're just, cool with me watching.
It's just,
not the point here.
We're going to do a love triangle for titillation's sake. And let's just say it's for titillation's sake, as opposed to saying it's well-written stories, please.
Women's division's, like this, the universe of this women's division's just trash.
Come
right
back
now.
Britt Baker, please.
She can't make this make sense.
I know she can't.
No, it's you got Mercedes and then this crap and like none of it. I have a hard time even imagining how any of it fits together in a sort of satisfying or intriguing way that I'd want to watch. This stuff sucks.
And then we get the title eliminator between Dustin and Joe, which while good, number one, the blood comes way too quick and it comes accidentally as opposed to Joe being so angry about the pre-match beatdown before by Swerve that he takes it out on Dustin, which should have been the way it did. And maybe even to the point where he gets DQ'd and loses the title eliminator, meaning Dustin gets a title shot later. No. Instead, it becomes a match between Dustin and Joe while Dustin's bleeding. Chains grab, that's a MacGuffin. He picks up the chain. That's a Swerve. He drops it. He hits him with the title belt. 1, 2, 3. Just to get Swerve back in the match where it's like, okay, great. So we just wanted to give Dustin a title win to say thank you to Cody or a title match to say thank you to Cody or whatever.
No, I don't think it was thank you.
Oh, you think it was a slight burial on Tony's part?
Yeah. Absolutely, because especially as you just sort of illustrated with, this is an eliminator match. All they had to do was set this up where Dustin wins as sort of a nod to Cody.
And
he doesn't win the title.
No.
He just wins the eliminator match.
Yeah,
and it's
win
like,
the eliminator
yeah,
match,
like,
and then let
a
Joe
feel good moment where we say, yes, we're all in on the success of the Rhodeses across the board. No, I viewed this as a little bit of a burial.
You let Dustin win this one because either Joe gets so mad he gets DQ'd, and then you just have him murder death Dustin on the next one to the point where Swerve comes out and saves him before Dynasty on the go-home show. It's there's so much weird build in this company.
I mean, they didn't even really commit to the notion that Dustin really wanted the title right now.
No,
his whole build is I just have banger matches all the time. Like it wasn't this like incredible.
No. I think here's the other issue. I think there was a throwaway promo on Rampage where he goes, you know, I've never held a world title before. I'd really like a chance at one. Kind of a thing. It's like, yeah, well, not everybody watches everything. Show us that promo, please. I would like to see it. But this whole episode can be encapsulated because I forgot one little thing that wasn't worth talking about, but it was great. It's like Ospreay is out there talking about AEW. This is where we wrestle, and this is where wrestling takes place. Wrestling, wrestling, wrestling. And they cut to the Julia Hart House of Black lore promo. And I just went, that's perfect. That's perfection right there. That is what we're dealing with here. This show felt uneven in so many ways.
It felt desperate, dude.
There was a little desperation.
This is a desperate show. They have these stars, Copeland, Okada, Monet, and you have Okada coming out here and having an enhancement match. Like, why? What for? What is the point of this?
And then you have him go back and do a loosey-goosey promo with Kingston and Briscoe that kind of, because it's being taped live, Copeland misses his line, so they have to actually repeat the whole thing to set up the mixed tag match. It looked unprofessional. It was just... do pre-tapes.
Okada does not feel like a prestige guy.
Yeah.
Which is so weird because he's Kazuchika Okada. Like, he should feel, or Kazuchika Okada. I'm still not used to
you
saying
and I both
kazoo.
Do that.
I'm not used to saying kazoo with this guy. I don't like thinking of him as Kazuo Okada.
I will also say that FTR calling the Young Bucks Rod and Todd made me pop pretty hard.
Yeah, except that Cash looked like the ultimate, like, something about wearing a grown man wearing a Simpson shirt.
From 1992.
There's a real energy there that is lame. Like lame dad energy.
Either lame dad energy or never really left your house since the 90s energy, kind of a shut-in energy.
Like he could have came out there with an old school South Park shirt from like 98, like with like Kenny. Oh my God. It's been long enough now. Actually, oh my God, you killed Kenny would actually be kind of cool and ironic, but yeah, no, it's very much, it had a Golga wearing the South Park t-shirts kind of energy.
Do you have anything else that I missed anywhere that you wanted to bring up for anything in the Lazy River? I know we kind of went in.
No,
last week.
Yeah. We kind of hit everything. I know we had some follow-up stuff, but I didn't see anything like on NXT that beyond the dazzled me or anything.
I thought the debut was pretty good. The gymnast kid. Remind me a lot of the gymnast that they used to have. I forgot his name. I had it written down here. Let me get it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They did a nice little job with that. And
Stacey Irvin Jr. when they had him. I forgot his working name.
And then the tag match, obviously. The title match was fun. And then outside of that, Raw was Raw.
We'll leave it there then.
Yeah, we'll leave it there.
You can follow me on Elon Musk's X, aka Twitter, at CrapGame13. Arcane jokes, arcane references, bad jokes, and wrestling talk for the most part. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'll get into that in a sec. You can follow Chris on his Instagram because he only does Instagram. He refuses to come anywhere else, probably because he's smart. At @DOCTOR_NOV. We are, again, part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. If you like more, let's say, work rate type talk, plenty of shows for you, including The Flagship and Good, the Bad, the Hungy, which is more AEW-centric. I do a show that focuses only on Dynamite over on the Fight Game Media Network. It's called The Dynamite Show. We go live on YouTube about 20 minutes afterwards, myself and Paul Fontaine from F4W. Chris has other varied interests that he'd like to tell you about now, including his ears.
Yeah, well, my ear, I mean, you know about my ear, right? Like my yes. right side's, yeah, it's like freaking collapsed in. So I'm getting surgery on that next week. That'll be exciting. I used to teach music lessons.
Wait, you don't anymore?
Well, I would like to, but my homeowners association has actually said that I am not allowed to teach music lessons out of my house unless I get express written consent from the board. I have now I put up $600 worth of soundproofing in the last week here, and I received another noise violation on a Saturday around 7 p.m. for briefly playing my drums for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes maybe, after I'd set up all the soundproofing just to try it out. So, yeah, no, I have played that acoustic guitar. I look longingly at my musical setup that I set up. And I am enjoying deeply the monkey paws millennials dream slash nightmare of owning a house that brings you infinite torment. But if you'd like to take some guitar lessons via Zoom or with your acoustic guitar, I am certainly available. Message me on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. Help me move out of this hellhole.
I'm looking forward to the feud.
It's coming.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.